Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 252 of Nerd Pride Radio. 252, an awesome number. It's 2 squared times 3 squared times 7. I love that. So many pretty factors. So divisible. Now, I know, 180 came up with that many factors before. I mean, it's how many factors is that? That's 3 times 3. Times 2, so 18 factors for 252. I know 180 did that before 252 did, but 252 has that 7 in there, so it's so much cooler. It's like super divisible yet still quirky. Like
slow, mainstream slow week for number facts?
Mainstream but also hipster. No, I love the number 252. I've always loved 252. It is a great number. In fact, if you go even further, multiply it by 10 and get 2,520, then 2,520 is the first number that is divisible by all the digits 1 through 10, or all the numbers 1 through 10. 10 isn't a digit. It is awesome.
I need a new dad. Anyone interested?
So awesome. I love 252. So anyway, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask
me. How you doing?
I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones, and I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go away for a week to have run about all the nerd stuff that won't fit in my skull anymore. Also with me, as he is once a month or so, is my son Aiden.
Howdy.
And he's not nerdy at all. Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, that was just a joke. You're a nerd. No, nerd. Better?
Okay. Dan doesn't like
that. When you're nodding, they can't hear that.
I wasn't nodding.
Okay. Anyway, our sponsor this week is Baker's Pride Model 252 Super Deck Series Gas Pizza Oven. Oh, the Baker's Pride Model 252. It's a standard depth of gas pizza oven that's designed for all of your high-volume baking needs. This double-stacked oven even features 2 Kodirite decks with 8-inch deck heights and independently controlled top and bottom heat dampers for perfectly balanced results every time. This 48-inch wide model is constructed with heavy-duty quarter-inch angle iron frame, fully welded to allow for stacking. The oven exterior is heavy-duty stainless steel and fully insulated for cooler outer temperatures and super consistent interior temperatures.
Why and how are you advertising the exact make and model of the oven we use at work?
The Baker's Pride 252, perfect professional pizza every time. Because it's a Baker's Pride 252. It came up in a search for 252. And so therefore...
Oh, because, yeah, that's the exact model we use at work.
Wow, well, apparently... They're really cool.
Really good for stacking.
Yeah, from their ad copy. So there you go. Anyway, enough of that. It is time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I and Aiden, when we talk about whatever's been on our minds for the last week. If something strikes us as interesting during the course of our busy, busy weeks, we add it to our master list, and then the best stuff off of those lists gets spewed out all over you guys. Every week when we record.
You lucky dogs.
You lucky dogs. Straight into it. First up, it's my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games, if it fits on our gaming table, we are here to share it with you. And I actually only have a couple of little things myself. I have... the Nerd Pride Deadpool, the 15th annual Nerd Pride Deadpool.
15th?
15th annual Nerd Pride Deadpool.
You've been hoping for people's death for 15 years?
Here's the thing. But Nerd Pride's only been around for 8 years, you say. How is this possible that you have a 15th annual? Yeah, it comes from Animal Ball before us. And we're getting geared up. If you want to play, get me a list of celebrities that you think may die in the calendar year 2019 and send them to me. In order from most likely to least likely to die, in your opinion, or that you are most like would most like on your list. But send them to me in order. Usually you get 10, well, always, you get 10 total celebrities by the end. And so to avoid duplicates, since we run a draft system, if someone else drafts out a celebrity before you can get to it in your list, you know, send me a list of about 30 of them, and that usually covers it. Or if you've been playing a while and we all start to think alike and we have a lot of overlap in our lists, maybe you want 40 or 50. But about 30 names, and if you have it to me by Christmas Eve, by 8 a.m., or not Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, 8 a.m. on the morning of December 31st, I will put it into the mix and make you part of the draft, and you can play the Deadpool this year. And that's all the work you have to do is just send me a list and then sit around and wait for the glory to roll in. That's it. Just a note that Godball is still a thing, and because I've been sick for a while and just busy and just I've been so tired all the time, I just haven't been motivated to get to it. But finally, like the last 2 days, all of a sudden, I'm talking with Dave again and getting some stuff together, and hopefully we'll have a new print-and-play version ready because I want, really, really want to have my own version printed up and ready to play and playtest over Christmas with my family and friends, etc. So that would be super... Well, okay, family. I don't have friends. But I'm hoping...
I'm your friend.
Well, yeah, but you're also family, and that comes first. So, sort of. All right. Anyway, the whole point... Yes, you're my friend, and I love you.
No, the joke's too easy.
What?
Don't worry about it. Continue. I was going to play off of family comes first and make an incest joke.
So anyway, you know, hey, I'm excited. And so we'll have a new print and play version ready, hopefully soon, but we'll see how that goes. You got anything for the gaming table before I roll on?
So I'm part of a D&D game.
And
really? For the first time, my dad isn't the DM.
Oh, thank God. I feel better than telling you that we've been playing without you. So
have you?
No. Really, I'm just kidding. Again, tired.
You're perfectly allowed to.
I know we are. I've been tired. I have not been able to get motivated for anything for a while. And now for the first time, oh, I can breathe. I don't have whatever that stomach flu thing was from last week. I just feel good. I actually feel like I slept and got oxygen all night long. Kind of nice. But you, D&D.
Okay, so it's a weird story about how I got into this one. I need a shift because the nub of my ankle is pressing into this wooden chair and it's hurting me. But,
Oh, wow, and that led you to a D&D game?
Well, no,
it's
because,
amazing.
My roommate, both my roommates are in it, and they play at our place a lot, and so I'll just pop in, and at one point I got bored, so I rolled up a list of really weak characters, and then I'd roll a die, show them the die in the phone where I have my list, and then he'd somehow incorporate it into the game, and it was great. And so I became kind of this invisible there, not there force, where people could choose to acknowledge the things I said from this magical, invisible, voiceless force. Until eventually, our DM's like, just make him a character sheet. And now I will become physical, and it's gonna be weird.
Cool.
The game we're running so far is demons are working very secretively, and they're named after the 7 deadly sins.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, none of us know anything besides the DM.
Nice. So he's just going to copy the plot of Full Metal Alchemist?
Well, no. We're on our way to Jericho, actually.
Hey, wait. No, you know what?
Fictional Jericho.
No, you know what I'm super proud of?
What?
Is that I said Full Metal Alchemist, and you didn't mock me, which means I think I hit it kind of right. I couldn't remember. I knew that there was some anime we'd watched part of.
There are 7 deadly sins in that
right.
one.
I'm so proud of me. That's awesome.
You did it.
Yeah, I did. Wow, that is really cool.
Yeah.
I'm very happy for you, because that's super exciting, and you need that.
And he's a way better DM than my old one.
Wow. Well, I wish you all the best of luck then. So,
you'll always be my number one.
No, I'm just your side piece now. I get it. It's fine. I don't mind. As long as I get just a little bit of you, that's all I want. It's fine. So, alright. And then that's
it. It's not me, it's you.
That's it for our gaming table. Next up, Roku! Roku is the box that I used to watch all of my streaming television on, and now I watch streaming television through other sources, but I love to say Roku! So that's what we do, and that's what we call this segment. So
I have a Roku box.
Do you?
Yeah.
Is that what you use to watch your streaming television?
No.
Oh. So it's not what you use to watch The Haunting of Hill House?
Oh my god, can I talk about The Haunting of Hill House?
That's why I'm here, man.
Okay, so I have some good things to say about it, and I've got some bad things to say about the media. So,
okay, wait, Haunting of Hill House, is this Hulu?
Netflix original.
Oh, okay, Netflix. All right, good.
Yeah, Netflix original show, and it is a 10-episode horror series following a specific family and their lives in and outside of this haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
They lived in the haunted house about 20 years ago, and the effects have not left.
Okay.
And it's fascinating and emotional, and it's got really, really good horror, even by my standards.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is...
That which is high praise, by the way. Go ahead.
The problem is that the media had articles like, Haunting of Hill House is so scary, people are throwing up. And when I read that, I'm like, nothing can be that scary, so I went and watched it, and I was right. No, like, my hopes were so high. And because the media put my hopes on this pedestal, I was ultimately let down at first. If that makes sense.
I follow you, and yet it still turns out that it's pretty
high
quality.
Right, it's really good once I got past, it's not trying to be full-on horror, there's also this family element and this emotional connection. And...
Right, well, because when you're running for 10 episodes,
mm-hmm.
you gotta temper it. It can't be jump scares.
No, that's the thing.
Creepy.
Almost no jump scares.
I'm impressed.
Yeah,
I have not watched it. I was put off of it because for a solid week, every single advertisement I heard on Spotify was nothing but Hill House.
Really, just because people were recommending it, you didn't want to watch it, Aiden?
Call me Andrew. So... That's just for you, Sam. Because this same ad came on, and it was like, it wasn't like it was, I was only hearing ads for Hill House. It's like I was only hearing one ad for Hill House. So every single time.
Save big money, Edwin, no.
Yeah, every single time. That one's for you, John. Every time there was a break in my music, I was getting this exact same ad, and I just got, like, the first couple times, I'm like, huh, because it actually sounds interesting. They're comparing the house to a human body, and, mm-hmm. and you know, that this is the heart of the house, and this is the, and, okay, but that was
yes.
just in the ad, and then the little kid says something creepy at the end.
I didn't know that they chucked that into the...
It's just a quick thing. Okay. But because of that, you know, the first couple times I heard it, I'm like, that sounds vaguely interesting.
So good.
The 75th time I heard it, it's like, Jesus, would you just stop?
It's so good.
So I'm glad to hear it's good.
Yeah.
I may give it a shot.
Welcome back to episode 252 of A Middle-Aged White Man Complaining About His First World Problems.
So, the streaming bit that I watched recently was it on Netflix? Hulu? I can't remember anymore. I think it was on Netflix. Yeah, it is. I watched the first season of Happy.
I've heard good things.
Oh, my God. Okay, so Chris Maloney, who was the tough, badass cop from the first season of Law & Order SVU, he was like that the first 8 seasons. He was the slightly balding guy, but he was the badass. And Chris Maloney is... And I don't even know how many seasons it was. Maybe it was 15, maybe it was 9. I have no idea.
You're talking like an old guy again.
Right, I know, I'm rambling. Makes no difference. Anyway, Chris Maloney in this stars as a disgraced cop who has now turned to mercenary work as a hitman, as a whatever. And he is in a bad state. He's a drunk and he's screwed up. And he is found by some kid's imaginary friend. And due to circumstances that are weird, he winds up being the only one who can see this imaginary friend. And now he is exhorted by Happy, the imaginary friend, played by Patton Oswalt, of all people. To go find this kid and rescue her.
I love Patton Oswalt in anything.
Well, he is a flying blue cartoon unicorn in a really gritty, awful, bloody world.
He hams it up in everything he's in.
He's really good.
As a blue unicorn, I can only imagine the possibilities.
And I had some concern at the beginning of this one that, well, you know what, I'm actually going to touch on this later in the episode.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit knockoff?
No, I was worried that the way Chris Maloney's character comes off is like he's a drunk and he's an asshole and he is just a terrible human being and yet he completely kicks ass all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
like Archer?
Yeah, and I didn't want this to be one of those where this terrible, terrible human being is romanticized as some sort of hero that you should emulate.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the series, no, very clearly. I mean, he also needs to learn a lesson and grow up a little bit. And by the end, anyway, it's weird. But by the end, no, there's no part of this life that you're wishing was yours.
Ooh,
so,
we have another thing on Roku.
Oh my God, guys. Okay, so let me tell you a story.
You're not allowed to tell this story.
No, I can. Let me tell. This story, which has nothing to do with your story, and then you tell your story so that it all ties together. You just trust me on
all
this.
All right.
So, a couple weeks ago, or so, whenever it was that I talked about Shakespeare in Love.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that was 2 weeks ago.
So, I watched Shakespeare in Love with Eli and Noah, and in order to get Shakespeare in Love, the only way to watch it was to get Cinemax. And so, I signed up for the free one-week trial of Cinemax, which... apparently, I wound up paying $9, and it turned into a free month. Well, not free. It was a $9 month of Cinemax, but I wound up canceling it. But I still have Cinemax until day after tomorrow. And so, as a result of this, day after tomorrow, flee! The cold is going to get us!
If we run fast enough, it won't catch us!
We have to outrun the cold. Anyway, no, not day after tomorrow. After watching... Shakespeare in Love. I also had my sick days in there, and I wound up watching The Hitman's Bodyguard, which is a stupid, flawed movie, and yet Sam Jackson and Ryan Reynolds are both so charming in it that I was willing to overlook all the plot holes and just be blindly entertained while I was in a fever state. And so that was pretty cool. And I saw Logan...
Logan is so good.
Which was awesome, and I've mentioned
Xavier
that.
Xavier with dementia is weird.
Yes, and no spoilers. And I...
Well, it's like the first 5 minutes of the movie.
I'm kidding. I'm going to give some spoilers to this later, too. I mean, I've watched so much. I started watching MacGruber because I had heard people talking about how fondly they remember MacGruber.
When I saw it.
Yeah, and look, the homophobia and... And yes, I get that they're making fun of toxic masculinity, but the first 10 minutes of it put me off, and I couldn't keep watching MacGruber. God, there's like two others. Jupiter Ascending that I talked about last time. I watched so much. So now it's your turn because my son came over last night. Aiden came over last night, and let him tell his story first.
So let's go back 13 years.
13? What, you only would have been like 7.
Yeah, man. Would you, at that time, show your 7-year-old a horror movie? Like a really graphic horror movie?
I don't know, Kyle, would we? Yeah, Kyle says it's okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, they showed me The Grudge 7 years ago. And I had nightmares about that movie for 7 years. Like,
he is looking at me so accusingly right now. Like, you know what? I thought you were mature enough to handle it. Pardon me if I misjudged you, wimp.
So, now that I've been watching horror movies practically as a living now...
In my defense, it's PG-13. It's PG-13.
Was I 13 at the time?
No, but as your parent, I used my parental guidance to make a judgment call, and I had not seen the movie myself beforehand, but I thought, come on, how bad could it be, right?
The answer was bad. Bad for 2005.
Okay.
I'd like to throw in that preface before we get into the actual review here.
No, you don't have to worry about that because I'm with you. When we watched it in 2005 or whatever it was, because, yeah, the movie was 2004. We would have watched it when it was out streaming or on video or whatever.
I think we watched it on DVD.
And probably, because we had DVDs back then. And so when we watched it then, yes, it scared the crap out of Jacob and Aiden.
I think that's what broke Jacob from horror movies.
And, yeah, for a long time. And
he's only recently beginning back into them, and that's awesome.
Lisa and I were of the opinion that, oh, yeah, it was a little more intense than we were expecting. We considered it a very intense and entertaining horror movie when we saw it back then. So, for what it's worth. So now, Aiden's over, and he says, you know, one of these days I really need to go back and watch The Grudge again. Because I just need to see if it's really as bad as I remember. And so I looked it up on whatever the services that I use to look things up, and it says, "Hey, you can watch it for free on Cinemax if you have Cinemax." I'm like, "Oh, holy crap! I have Cinemax for 3 more days. Like this is just last night." So 8 o'clock last night, Aiden and I sit down to watch The Grudge again,
it was so bad.
Yeah, this is the 2004 American remake of the original Grudge, the one with Sarah Michelle Gellar in it.
I think you mean Ju-on.
Yeah, Ju-on The Grudge.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, it was terrible.
Oh.
What a bad movie.
Like the worst part is almost all of it was jump scares.
It really was. It was like building tension, and then jump scare, and I'm trying to remember why we found that so
right.
Scary then? Is like, it just because we weren't used to the creepy, dark hair, pale skin, Japanese ghosts? Is it just because that was unique to us?
Well, it's also that, like, I don't know how anyone falls for jump scares when they're telegraphed like that.
Oh, so far ahead of time.
You can watch it coming at them. The music is rising. The music hits its peak. Jump scare.
It was so badly telegraphed. Everything in it is so obvious. If you haven't seen The Grudge in years, and it scares you.
Or if you've never seen The Grudge.
God, just don't even bother.
Right.
It was, plus, on top of that, like, the horror part of it is bad.
Story is confusing.
The little kid is good. Alright, the little kid is genuinely creepy.
He's got this intensity in his eyes.
But the woman that features in all the ads for it, like, the makeup is so heavy, with that permanently frozen expression, it just looked like a rubber mask. It was not good.
I will give her that the quaver she gives to her eyes is pretty good for a horror movie if, you know, it was put to good use.
Yes, but they should have made more use of the little boy because he was way creepy.
Yeah.
What was the last thing you said before I started sidetracking onto
the intensity in the little boy's eyes?
No, before that. Damn it. You said something that I was going to take off on. And all the viewers, listeners, remember what it is, and they're yelling at me now. But I don't remember. You just said something that was really interesting, and I was going to sidetrack on that, too. But
I mean, we said about the jump scares, and the plot was confusing.
Oh, the plot! Oh, my... What plot? This thing was terrible!
It was several segues just to get back to the house.
It is flashback, wait, now we're back in real time. Now we're in a flashback.
Does it count as a flashback if all of the entire events of the entire movie take place in 3 days?
Right, and it's like they give no context for how long ago these flashbacks occurred. Like, well, because the original murders were 3 years ago, but then all of this creepy stuff is just now. And then, like, one of them isn't even a flashback, it is Sarah Michelle Gellar stumbling into a room where suddenly a replay of events happens. So it's not even a... So everything's out of sequence.
A replay of events we've seen in other movies 100 times.
And everything that happens with here's what's happening currently, here's what happened with Yoko 2 days ago, here's what happened with the rest of the family 3 days ago, all of these... and here's what happened with the original murders 3 years ago. All of the events all take place in the exact same house.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, as you come around the corner, you have no idea even when you see what characters are in the scene,
you still have no idea when you are.
Don't know for sure which time period you're in. It was so badly done. Ugh. So badly done. I can't believe I ever let myself be scared by this movie because it was terrible.
So bad.
Oh. All right. So, having said that, do we have anything more to say about The Grudge? I don't want to cut you
off. I hate it.
Yeah.
I used to hate it, but now I hate it.
If I do the voice now, would it still bother you?
Oh, no, not at all.
See? And then I won't bother. All right. All right. Next up, it's the Unnamed History segment.
Oh, no.
Don't know much about history. What do you mean, oh no? We're only going back to 1981. It's not like it's that old.
Oh, okay.
Jeez. And it's about movies.
Is it?
Yes. Have you ever seen or heard of a movie
called...
Have you ever seen or heard of a movie called Roar? About lions and tigers and mountain
bears,
lions.
Bears, oh my?
No. Everyone does that. It's lions, tigers, and mountain lions.
Oh,
no?
My?
Okay. So, back in 1970, alright, I lied, it's gonna go back to 1970.
How dare you?
But the movie came out in 81.
My cutoff is 1975 and you know this.
Oh my god, when I was in kindergarten. So,
wait.
Yeah.
No, that checks out.
Yeah, thank you.
I couldn't tell if you were like trying to call yourself old, but no, that.
No, that's actually when I was in kindergarten. So anyway, in 1970, a writer, director, actor named Noel Marshall.
Oh, okay.
Decided that he wanted, well, yeah, I don't know Noel Marshall before looking into this, but he decided that he wanted to make a movie, and it's a story about a family who visits an eccentric scientist, doctor person in Africa, and while they're there, this guy has tons of animals, wild, dangerous animals on his property, and something happens to the doctor, and now the family is trapped there, and the animals won't let them leave, and they're very scared, and it's kind of a horror thriller sort of thing. This is the plot.
And then all the animals become undead, and the title card Zombies 2 comes up.
Oh my god, Zombies would be way better than what they did have.
What?
And, now, wait.
I don't believe you.
We'll get to this. And Noah, no, it's not quite a replay of the Reptile House from A Series of Unfortunate Events. But yes, similar. All right. So here's what Noel did. Noel decided he wanted this to be as realistic as possible. And so he got himself 150 large animals. All right. There were a couple of giraffes and there were some other things, but he had literally lions, tigers, mountain lions,
and bears.
The giraffes. Yeah, the bears. No,
oh my.
There were no bears.
No, but, okay. Can I go on a tangent real quick?
Yeah.
I watched a YouTube video recently about obtaining animals back in
just for the
Rome.
Just for the record, we don't normally allow tangents on this podcast, but I'm making an
how
exception
dare you.
Just for Aiden, because he's special.
But they were talking about how, if you knew the right people, how easy it was to receive 20 monkeys if you're a Roman scientist.
Nice.
And, like, I'm like, could you imagine trying to order 20 monkeys nowadays? And now you tell me, in modern day, someone ordered 150 large animals for a movie shoot.
He didn't order. A lot of them were rescues.
He had the resources to pool 150 animals.
So he starts collecting these animals on his property outside Los Angeles.
So wait, the movie's coming to life?
Wait.
Wait, how much property does he have outside of Los Angeles?
Well, they started getting complaints, and... The sheriff would come out, and, oh yeah, by the way, he's gonna star in this film.
wait, the local sheriff!
No, Noel Marshall, the director, is gonna star in this film, along with his wife, famous actress Tippi Hedren, who you may or may not have heard of, but Tippi Hedren was a famous actress.
We have this bit!
No, I don't know her. I mean, all I know about Tippi Hedren is the name Tippi Hedren, and I know that she's Melanie Griffith's mom. Melanie Griffith, who was married to Antonio Banderas. Puss in Boots, the dad from Spy Kids.
Oh, okay.
Antonio Banderas. All right. So Melanie Griffith, who was also married to Don Johnson, Don Johnson from from Miami Vice. And together, their kid is Dakota Johnson from 50 Shades of Grey. So, Dakota Johnson, the main girl from 50 Shades.
No, I know.
Okay.
No, that face was, why should I care?
You shouldn't. I'm just giving you context for who Melanie Griffith is, and thus Tippi Hedren, and anyway. So.
We don't usually want tangents on this show.
Right. Right, obviously. So anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, so anyway.
They were getting complaints.
So this movie was starring him, his wife Tippi Hedren, Tippi Hedren's daughter, who was, I believe, by the time the movie came out, she was probably 20, something like that. So Melanie Griffith is in it, and also his two sons are in it as well. And they would get complaints, and so the sheriff would come around and, hey, we have reports that you're keeping wild animals on your property. And at this point, the sheriff can see. He's looking right over Noel's shoulder. He can see right there at the back fence, Melanie Griffith and the other two boys throwing baby tigers over the fence into the neighbor's yard.
Why?
Well, so that they're not on the property. Well, I don't know what you're talking about, officer. Why, there's no wild animals around here. So eventually they were forced to move and get a larger property where they then had the permits to have all these wild animals. So having done this,
I can just imagine they've got buckets and they're bailing tigers out of their property like a sinking ship.
Let us note that they had, out of 150 wild animals that they made part of this movie, exactly zero of them were trained animals.
Oh.
These are all wild animals. No training, no domestication, nothing. These are just wild animals that are only behaved because they live on his property and he feeds them regularly. That's the only reason.
That doesn't sound safe.
And now he's going to throw his teenage stepdaughter out there to go wrestle with them for scenes in a movie. Because it worked for the authenticity. He wanted the family in the movie to be truly scared. And by God, he captured some fear. So, he put in probably, I think it was something on the order of $19 million to make this movie over the course of a decade. And in doing so, he then made back less than $2 million. It was never released in the United States. It was only released in Australia and Europe. And he lost a ton of money on this. It was released in Australia and Europe in 1981. It was released in the U.S. finally in 2015. They had a release at the Alamo Drafthouse. And the Alamo Drafthouse ran ahead of it the trailer that says, no animals were harmed in the making of this film. However, 70 members of the cast and crew were.
That's great!
Right, including Noel Marshall himself, wound up breaking his leg, got bit a bunch of times and had puncture marks that turned into gangrene. And
oof.
Yeah, horrible. Their cinematographer, one Jan de Bont was the guy's name.
No way, Jan de Bont?
Yeah, the cinematographer of Die Hard and both Speed movies.
I know!
Okay, yeah, Jan de Bont was the cinematographer for this stupid-ass film. And had his scalp completely lifted off by one of these cats, and took 220 stitches to reattach his scalp.
Oh.
That's how bad it was. Tippi Hedren suffered, I can't remember what injuries she had. Melanie Griffith had to have her face reconstructed, took 50 stitches to sew portions of her face and scalp back on. The thing is that the safe word in this movie was literally just the director's name, Noel. If you're in the middle of a scene and you shout Noel, that means, hey, I don't feel safe, this is bad, call cut, let's get out of here. All right. There is a scene with Melanie Griffith, and I watched this one on YouTube. You can see the damn thing. There is a lion has knocked her to the ground and is on her back and is biting the back of her skull. And I mean, I don't know if it's playful gnawing. I don't know if it's trying to eat her completely. I don't know what it's doing, but it is gnawing on the back of her skull. And, it's horrifying. And she starts off screaming, no, no, and then changes it to, no, no! She's clearly calling the safe word. He keeps it rolling because the footage was too good. I know. He made a judgment call. She wasn't in any real danger. Except that she's getting her scalp bitten.
She was in a lion's mouth!
Right, right. And she's screaming for help.
That's a situation that should only be real in cartoons!
And you watch from the moment she yells the safe word to the moment they call cut, like to where I assume he calls cut because that's where the scene ends. It was probably like just 12 more seconds, 10 more seconds. But you're watching it knowing it's a real lion attack, and it's a frickin' eternity. It is. And then you watch clips of this movie, and they're like doing this whole montage in the trailer, this montage of clips. And every one of them, you're like, oh my god, those are all real animal attacks. Yeah. Holy crap. And at some point, one of his sons asked him, said, you know, if this is supposed to be in Africa, there's no tigers or mountain lions in Africa, so how are you going to explain that? And the answer was, that's a stupid question. We're making a movie. So anyway, it was just, it's just horrifying to watch. If you want to see what I'm talking about, go out and pull up a trailer for Roar the movie, and you can see the Alamo Drafthouse trailer that they ran. And it is, again, just be aware that everything you're watching is untrained wild animals actually gnawing on real live human beings. And it is...
It sounds like the movie was a crap fest.
It was a cluster from the beginning. I mean, just terrifying. So, anyway, that's Roar, and that's my history segment. So, next up... Oh!
Fingertips! Fingertips! Fingertips!
Fingertips! No, stop! No! No! Stop being creepy. It's fingertips! This is the stuff that I haven't bothered to create a full segment for. I didn't feel like developing them, but I still want to talk about them. So, real quick, the movie Logan. I realized in retrospect, I love the movie. I love the movie for sure. But I do have one complaint.
I'm just getting the steak ready to burn you.
And this is one of those things that could have been taken care of easily. But And that's why I'm complaining about it. These are, I like to fix movies, and I like to, you know, when you find this error in the continuity or the science or the logic of the film, like, I like to fix what is otherwise a good film. It has this minor flaw, and God, it wouldn't have taken that much work to just make it right. And then everything could have been perfect. And then from here on, I can just pretend that it was fixed. Is that magic bullet, that magic adamantine bullet at the end of the movie.
Mm.
And they talked it up, and, you know, they let us know right off the bat that, you know, the first time we saw it, it's Chekhov's bullet. You know that thing is going to come into play. You know that this is going to be crucial to the finale of this film. Absolutely. But the problem is, and this is, okay, spoiler warning, if you don't want to hear this, you know, fast forward a little bit. The whole point of the adamantine bullet, it is the only thing that can kill Wolverine. That is our device here, is that if he shoots himself in the head with this adamantine bullet, it will kill him. And it's the only thing that can kill
that
him.
That is untrue. Decapitation can also kill Wolverine.
Well, yeah, well, or incineration in a nuclear blast, or there's lots of things. But this is the way that he has that's available to him that, you know, he could commit suicide if he wanted. And the problem I have with this is at the end of the film, they use the bullet to shoot X-24, the cloned Wolverine. They use it to shoot him in the head, and you watch half the guy's skull disappears from this bullet. And it's, okay, well, he was shot with an adamantine bullet. He's dead. That's it. And I keep saying adamantine. I should probably just say adamantium. But either way. And he's dead. And I'm like, but we've already shown that he can survive having adamantium in his body. I mean, he's got it in his bones and his claws break through. We've established in movie canon that his claws have to cut through his flesh every time he puts them out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he pulls them back in and it heals up right away. So it's not like adamantium causes wounds that won't heal.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also established that he has taken injury to his brain multiple times that heals up, and that's why he has some memory problems, but he still heals from that.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, there was nothing about this that he shouldn't have been able
to recover from.
Like, if you wanted to say you can't heal around it, great, then you know what? They could have solved it just by having the bullet lodge in the dude's brain. Like, it just goes up there and it stays there in his brainstem somewhere to prevent him from healing around it, and thus he's no longer functional.
Yeah, stick it in his brainstem, frickin' Heroes style.
They could do that.
Thanks for pausing to acknowledge my reference.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The only way to stop the regeneration powers for the guy in Heroes was to hit him in the spinal column.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's also the only way to kill the biotics in Future Man.
Is it?
Yes. Yes, you have to take out the brainstem. So anyway, because they also have regenerative capabilities.
And we found this out when the cheerleader got the piece of wood stuck in the back of her head.
So therefore...
And they only found that out because once they removed it during her autopsy...
She was fine.
Yeah.
You're right. So you know what? It is now official in all forms of media that if you need to stop someone from regenerating...
Just hit him with a brainstem.
Yeah. Have to block their brainstem. Okay, and that's all it would have taken, is just that little explanation, and then put the bullet there, which is not nearly as dramatic as blowing off half the guy's skull, but it would have been consistent, it would have worked with the other movies, it would have worked with the comic books mostly, you could have done something with that, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it would have been the bullet's there, but we know if we remove the bullet, he's going to live again, so we'd maybe have to add in a little scene that we need to throw him into the volcano or whatever it is you do.
Turns out he has the same weakness as snails. You just put a little salt on him.
But also, look, once you've got the adamantium bullet in his brainstem, now he's not regenerating. Now you can just throw him in a fire and wait for, you know, your adamantium skeleton to come out.
You just pour the salt into the wound.
Then you have a cool trophy. So
yeah, you got him skeleton bones.
Okay, but that was my problem with Logan. And that's there's other little things about it, but nothing worth really going on about. That was the one that just... The continuity of that bugged me, and the moment they brought out the bullet the first time, I knew that was going to be problematic for me. But it was minor. The movie isn't about that. The movie is about the human drama of it, and that part, awesome.
A man struggling with his newfound mortality.
Okay. Here's my problem that I thought I was going to have with Happy. All right? The next segment, by the way. Is that, I thought this was going to be another one where it was going to turn out that people wind up liking this guy and idolizing this guy for all the wrong reasons.
Oh.
And it turns out he's way too comic. And it doesn't come up that way, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
But I made the comparison because I was listening to some guy talk about Punisher this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I have already talked about Punisher, about how...
He tortures people!
Why is Punisher's skull symbol combined with an American flag considered uber patriotic right now?
He murders and tortures people.
Right. And
he's
so,
not a good dude.
No, he's clearly not, but he is. The answer I got from a YouTuber named Bo. He's Bo of the Fifth Column. And if you haven't watched Bo of the Fifth Column, I highly recommend him. I love this dude. He is a redneck good old boy who loves his guns, but also is a strong feminist and a supporter of human rights and a very liberal in most ways, except he's pro-gun. And I love Bo. I think he's a great guy and he's very reasonable. I like the way he presents his stuff. But he was talking about Punisher, and he didn't go on about the way people misunderstand Punisher. But he did make the point that, yeah, Punisher is a story about PTSD. Punisher is about a story a guy who comes back from war traumatized, and as soon as he gets back from war, finds out that his family is now completely wiped out, and he's a guy who has suffered so much trauma, and he has all the classic PTSD symptoms, and he has nightmares throughout the series,
Is murder a classic PTSD symptom?
And he is haunted and driven, but not being able to recognize context and treating all situations as if they are this high stress situation. So to him, everything is, in the heat of battle. Everything is the midst of wartime. Everything is justified according to and it's PTSD. And that's the study of it. And so he's not meant to be idolized. He's meant to be a villain, but a sympathetic villain.
I was going
to
say, it's more sympathy than anything.
Right. But he's been turned into this hero because the toxic masculinity that he represents is super attractive to certain people. And the idea
mostly
that...
men. Weird.
Yeah. And the idea that's who we idolize and that we should be... We should be out there hunting down these illegals and shipping them back to where they came from or just picking them off. That we should have these skulls on our cop cars, on our, on our, patches on our sleeves, the insignia of so many, different units in the military. The insignia of so many units actually carries the Punisher skull on it. It's just not even funny. But I've covered all that before.
Do you know what the worst part about that is for me?
What's that, Aiden?
Sorry, I'm across the room grabbing a drink.
That's fine.
The worst part for me is that foreign units that are part of our military are also banned from using it.
Yeah, it is crazy. But it's the same sort of thing.
Like, because murder and torture is so American that no other country can use it, right?
You've seen the movie Fight Club with me. We watched it together.
Yeah.
All right.
Didn't watch Superbad, though.
And, oh yeah, we do. Superbad does not have this problem.
I know.
There's no one going idolizing McLovin for all the wrong reasons.
I don't think you can idolize McLovin for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, he is a badass. The point is, Fight Club has the same issue that
it's a schizophrenic dude,
right? And it is a whole commentary on the death of traditional toxic masculinity and how people respond to what has been the traditional role of the middle-class white male in society and how they handle no longer being needed in this same role of protector, warrior, provider. And rather than take the commentary on it and how it destroys this guy's life and destroys half a city and millions of people's lives, rather than focusing on that, there are people who idolize Tyler Durden for being so badass.
I mean,
they've completely missed. Well, because he gets the girl.
He fell down the stairs.
Exactly. And he, again, it's idolizing this guy for the wrong reason. I don't know if I've ever.
I don't think there's a right reason to idolize Tyler Durden.
No, there is. It is the wrong reason to worship that movie. Because it's a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
But it is taken wrong by so many people.
Spoiler. Tyler Durden isn't real.
Oh, God. I get it now. Oh, now the whole movie makes sense. God, I feel like an idiot.
I was wondering why he was only in the main guy's reflection for a while.
I'm looking at my list. Rick and Morty does the same thing Rick is this horribly broken, dysfunctional human being who destroys his family and everyone around him.
But a bunch of these internet freaking I am very smart guys idolize him because he's this mightier than thou figure.
Right, because I am Pickle Rick. Because he can do anything.
Because I'm neither Republican nor liberal. You're both wrong and stupid and I can prove it mathematically. Blah, 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 blah. Screw up.
Right. Yeah, it is forgetting the fact that, being the smartest guy in the room, being able to turn yourself into a pickle and then survive to come back from it. These are all badass, but, the whole Pickle Rick episode was
him proving that he's weak.
It was
he can't stand to face his family in a
Right. It was he almost killed himself to avoid going to therapy.
Exactly.
And to avoid having to talk about his feelings and interact family. With his family. Yeah. So, and then I also, and this is not the same toxic masculinity bit, but I also throw Harley Quinn into this that, I can't, again, Harley Quinn is an awesome character. I like Harley Quinn as a character. I've always liked her, but nobody should want to be like Harley Quinn. Nobody should idolize her.
Why should be named Harley Quinn?
Oh my God. And certainly never ever name your baby Harley Quinn. What were they thinking?
Why are you making fun of my friends?
Whoa.
We were dancing around the subject.
Yeah. But yes, we do know people who named their daughter, Harley Quinn. And, to me, I think that's a little weird.
A little dangerous.
And not just that they named her Harley Quinn and they call her Harley. No, they call her Harley Quinn. That is her full name, and that's how they use it every single time.
She sees Harley Quinn on TV and it's like, that's me.
Yeah. This little girl already knows that she is Harley Quinn. And it just baffles me because then for the first time I saw it in writing, I'm like, wait, they misspelled it. Wait, you're going to name your kid after Harley Quinn and you're not even going to spell it right? How the hell does that happen? It turns out that the mom had wanted to name her Harley to start with. And then the dad, being a huge comic book nerd, said, oh my God, can we give her the middle name Quinn? And then, yes, but only if you spell Harley the way I was going to spell it originally. And so that's why she is Harley Quinn misspelled. So.
But no, let's name our daughter and have her identify with this psychotic murderer.
Look, it's just a name. I'm sure they can manage that. I'm sure that they are really good parents and they can guide her through the tribulations of having a name like Harley Quinn. I mean, they wouldn't have put her in that situation if they didn't think they could handle it, right?
I was going to say, so, man, if you want your kid to get their ass kicked, that's how you do it.
Well, nobody messes with Harley Quinn.
But people mess with a girl named Harley Quinn.
Okay. Did you know?
Do you know?
That there's an argument in Britain over how you pronounce the word scone?
Yeah.
How do you pronounce it?
Scone.
What's the other pronunciation?
Scone.
Scone. I didn't know this until last week.
Yeah. You know, I have a friend from Britain. He's like, yeah, it's a scone. I'm like, it is not.
It is not.
I will tell you it is not.
I will fight you.
And then he called me, I can't remember all of it, but there was rebellious American in there, and he brought up things from the 1700s.
Look, and I get that it's their language and accents, right, and dialects. You can say whatever you want. It's really fine. But I did not know. Scone? That sounds so wrong. And this all came up in an argument on a podcast I was listening to where they were arguing over whether you put the clotted cream on your scone first and then put on the jam, or you put the jam on first and then the clotted cream. That clotted cream being basically just here's the thing. I've never known what a scone was. I just knew it was a pastry of some sort. And I look it up and it's essentially just a biscuit. Mm-hmm. It is nothing but a good old southern buttermilk biscuit, except they don't make it with buttermilk. But it's a biscuit. It's that kind of flaky pastry. And so when they're putting...
They couldn't call it a biscuit because their cookies are already biscuits.
Right. Right, exactly. Well, then wait, what are chips? So, crisps?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then fish sticks are chips.
No.
I know.
No. So, here's the thing. Is that once I'm looking at it and I see their scones and I see their process for putting on the cream and jam, and I realize, oh, this is no different than just having a biscuit with butter and jelly on it, which I love a biscuit with butter and jelly on it. Mm, they are awesome. So,
Did you put on first?
The butter first.
Alright.
You put the butter on first and then the jelly.
You can live for another day.
Here's the thing is that they have this whole argument over whether you put on the cream or the jam first. Whereas I'm like, yeah, but with an American biscuit, you just break it open, you put jelly on this side and butter on this side, and then sandwich it up, and then it's perfect. But here's the thing, is that there is a song from Monty Python where they sing the Lumberjack song.
Mm-hmm.
All right, have you heard the Lumberjack song?
Of course I have.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. All right. And in...
It's a very transpositive song.
And in that song, it's actually a very homophobic song.
I know. Yeah, okay. I know. I'm aware. And, I was being sarcastic.
Okay. In that song, there's the first hint that maybe this lumberjack isn't quite as manly as he's supposed to be is when he sings, "On Wednesdays I go shopping and have buttered scones for tea." Now, my whole life, I've known that was buttered scones. All right, I knew that's what the line was buttered scones, and I never thought of anything of it until hearing them argue about scone versus scone, and I'm like, wait a minute, how do they say it in the Monty Python song? So I start singing it in my head, and I realize, oh my God, they say scones.
Yeah,
like all this time, that's that, and I never even realized
you
that they said it differently.
You were just reading through the accent.
Right, because I just knew it was scones, so I didn't even bother with what they were. It was weird. So
yeah, for lately, I've been having a really tough time recognizing accents. So like hearing, I'm like, oh yeah, that's an accent. I can't tell from where, but it definitely is. Until they use a word, like my British friend, instead of Adidas, it's Adidas.
Oh yeah, isn't that weird? Yeah. All right. Last thing I've got is, at what point can we just stop having to explain Schrodinger's cat every time we mention it?
Never.
Because I was watching someone on YouTube, and it was a podcast that is mostly about science stuff, and they made a reference to Schrodinger's cat, and then they had to stop and spend 90 seconds explaining the basics of Schrodinger's cat before they could then move on.
Yep.
And I'm like, who is your intended audience? Do you really think anyone listening to this did not know that ahead of time? I mean, you could have said, hey, and if you're not familiar with Schrodinger's cat, link to this video where we do a whole bit about it.
Or it's to make the people who are watching be like, oh, I already knew that. I'm so smart.
It is. Well, because for me, I mean, at some point, Schrodinger's cat has to just be accepted common knowledge, and you don't have to explain it every time.
Schrodinger's cat is common knowledge.
Well, then stop explaining it every time we get to it. That's the thing I'm complaining about. Because, all right.
Explaining it is an excellent example of a hyperstate, though.
A what?
How the cat is in a hyperstate.
So
when you explain it, you're also explaining and reminding people that we're about to be talking about hyperstates.
Yeah. I don't know. It reminds me of, you don't watch Forensic Files, but I've seen lots of Forensic Files because it's your mom's fallen asleep show. So you put on some Forensic Files and she's asleep before it's 10 minutes in. And so I've seen or listened to lots of them. And this is a show about forensic police work from mostly from the 90s and 2000s, but mostly 90s. And every time they bring up DNA evidence, they start explaining how DNA evidence works and how we go through this process of extracting the DNA. We use a centrifuge and we do this and that, and then we can compare these. It's like, yeah, we all know how DNA works.
Does Netflix have a skip the explanation button?
It's the kind of thing that nowadays you would never, and they spend 2 minutes on it every single time they bring up DNA evidence. And you would never do that nowadays, because when they say DNA evidence and then they compare, like, you don't have to justify DNA. Nowadays, we just know, DNA evidence, it's like fingerprints. It's going to match or it's not going to match. You just, but back then, it wasn't such a solid thing, and they felt like they had to explain it every single time it came up. And so I'm like, can't we get to that point with Schrodinger's cat where we don't feel like we have to explain it every time we do it? We can just assume that anyone who's smart enough to be watching our show already knows. And if they don't know, you know, they should be curious enough to go look that stuff up. Maybe that's just me. All right. Anyway, that's all I got for fingertips. So, did you have anything?
I got 10 of them.
Yay! Then in that case, we're going to move on to the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, we bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble. He rolls up random topics for us to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Ask me.
That's where you come in.
Oh, That's where you come in. You want to hear us haver on about something? You send your question or topic to us by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums at nerdpriderio.com/nerds. And we'll add it to our Podomatic list, because Podomatic is about whatever you want it to be. That's pretty good.
I do it every time.
I know, and I'm really impressed. I'm complimenting you, because you know what? I don't give you enough credit on this show.
Oh, well, you know what? You know, I'm not going to play that up. Thanks.
You're welcome. In our first episode,
we talked about
Podomatic number is 91. Hold on, I gotta get rid of Last Jedi. There we go. That one's gone.
I mean, I wish we could get rid of Last Jedi.
Whoa. Don't get ahead of us. Let me get down to number 91 is from Jacob. I know him. Jacob says, Link has a motorcycle.
Yes.
Mario can be a hyper-realistic T-Rex.
Yes.
And a Shih Tzu can dunk on Cloud Strife in Smash Bros. What is the most ridiculous thing some of your favorite classic video game characters could be doing now?
Okay, let me tell you about a game called Ghosts and Goblins.
Yeah?
Imagine that a knight has to go fight Satan twice, and if you do the game right, he's in a Speedo the entire time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Alright, that works. Alright, here's the other thing, though. This is a question of, take Link's original incarnation, now Link has a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Take original Mario, now Mario can turn into a T-Rex with that stuff.
Right.
Where else can you go with a character?
Give Kirby the ability to inhale the entire universe. Oh no, they did that. Give him a sword the entire size of the screen. Oh, nope. Give him a star that he can ride on that can travel 99% the speed of light. Damn it.
Alright. How about we take Mega Man and we just turn him into a Transformer? Can we do that? But not one of the good ones. Like, he's the one that can turn into a boombox.
You mean Mega Dog?
Shut up. Damn it. See, I know
nothing. No, he doesn't transform into a dog, but...
No, I'm thinking of Dino-Mutt. That's what I'm thinking of. Captain Falcon and Dino-Mutt. That was a great cartoon.
Wait!
I love that. Are you familiar with Dino-Mutt?
I'm thinking of the other Captain Falcon when you say that.
Well, maybe
Captain
it wasn't Captain
Falcon.
No, it's Blue Falcon. Blue Falcon and Dino-Mutt.
No, I need Captain Falcon and Dino-Mutt now. The star of F-Zero and a robot dog.
This one is number 16. And 16 is from... Oh, there it is. It's from Mrs. Darks.
Hi, Mrs. Darks.
And she says, how do you get over the pathological need to fix everything in your children or for your children, especially in regards to friendships and bullies? Yeah, how do you get over that pathological need, Aiden? What did you do to stop trying to fix everything for your kids?
I drowned them.
That's terrible. Ignore what he just said.
I mean, it works.
So, I don't know. You just tell yourself that it's for the best. Like, yes, you need to offer them guidance, but you also need to let them just, like when my kid is working on an assignment and especially when it comes to writing and they've got the essay, and I can see, you know, and I can sit down and go, okay, here, look, this is a little unclear. You're going to want to add some information about this. And yeah, okay, let's go through and circle all the grammatical and punctuation mistakes. We'll take care of all that stuff. But like, there's sections of it where I'm like, oh, you know, if I just wrote it for you, it would be way better than this. like I'm looking at it going, okay,
I can remember a couple essays that you wrapped up for me at 5 a.m.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you were exceptionally lazy.
How dare you?
It's the idea of, yeah, you can't go in there and write your kid's essay for them. You have to let them do it themselves. They're getting graded on their ability. And certainly you can give them all sorts of great advice and suggestions, and, you know, you can do all the proofreading for them, but ultimately you've got to let them write it themselves. When it comes to bullies, Oh, that's a lot tougher.
You fight the bullies. Because the bullies always try to bring in their dads, but you gotta fight the bullies. You're an adult, you can take them.
Yeah, look, we've dealt with bullies before, and most of the time it is us warning our kids going, well, you know what, if you keep that up, you're gonna get your ass kicked.
And sometimes they get their ass kicked.
And sometimes they get their ass kicked. But you let them deal with it because most of the stuff they can deal with, but every once in a while, things do go over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that you have to step in and you have to go to a teacher or, further than that. We've been in the middle of legal action for stuff like this before. And it sometimes that's what's mm-hmm. required.
Yep.
But,
Wait, which legal action are we talking about? Mine?
Yeah, but I wasn't going to name names and I wasn't going to give details. Yes.
I was going to name names. Kid tried to strangle me in the freaking commons at the high school.
Yeah, and, kid strangled him until he passed out. And so, fortunately, there's cameras.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we did, in fact, go to the school, and we demanded that they pull up the cameras, and sure enough, there it was. And so, something got done. And that's, that's an extreme case. But, you know, sometimes you have to step in, but yeah, for the little stuff, the best you can do is give them advice.
Yep.
And say, well, you know what? Maybe you need to avoid this situation, or maybe you need to
stop asking for it.
Yeah. Maybe you need to stop being such a little punk. Okay. No, that's never the right advice. Sometimes you have to step in.
Here, let me teach you how to fight.
But sometimes you just gotta let them take care of it on their own. And I am not the master of which one. Of where that line is. I'm sure I've made mistakes. I'm sure there's been times that I should have stepped in and didn't, or times that I said something to somebody and shouldn't have. I have no idea. You know, nobody's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's best judgment. 46.
So close.
Uh-huh. Well, and here's the thing, is it was originally a 48, but then... as I pulled it over to see what it was.
The will of R2 moved it.
Yeah, the die just all of a sudden flipped itself over on its back. But well, either way, they're both from Kyle. So we'll go with this one. 46. It's from Kyle. Spider-Ham plays a role in the new, awesome-looking Miles Morales Enter the Spider-Verse animated movie. Am I wrong, or did we own the original limited series run of Spider-Ham, a.k.a. Peter Porker, that was done by Sergio Argonez? And speaking of which, how awesome was Gru? Look, I'm sure it doesn't hold up, but I loved me some Gru. Alright. First off, yes, we did in fact have, at least episode number one of Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham. I know we owned that magazine, and I don't know if we owned like a whole limited series run or what it was, but I know we had one magazine of it. And yes, I remember Gru being awesome. And I don't know why. I think it was because Gru was maybe the first fantasy parody that we became familiar with, where they were just outright making fun of fantasy epic-style tropes like Conan the Barbarian and D&D and this kind of stuff. It was the first time we had been exposed to that, and so it was super funny to us. And yeah, and my memory of it tells me that I would probably find it idiotic now, unreadable now, but I remember loving some Gru the Barbarian. It was a great comic. So
Dave the Barbarian is on the same level for me.
Yeah?
That whole parody of those kind of characters.
I have not... is Dave the Barbarian a cartoon?
Yes.
Okay. Then I know I have seen, like, a trailer for it. I don't know if I've seen a whole first episode or not, but I know what you're talking
with
about.
With his quick thinking, Dave constructs a rudimentary megaphone using nothing but a squirrel, some string, and a megaphone.
Nice. I like that.
But, like, also in that movie, the new Spider-Man coming out, it's Noir Spider-Man, my favorite Spider-Man.
Noir Spider-Man?
Yeah. I mean, he's right up there with the superior Spider-Man for me, but...
Alright, look, all I know is the Spider-Verse movie has Miles Morales in it, it then ultimately has Peter Parker in it.
Peter Parkers.
Yeah, it has Spider-Ham, it has...
Peter Pork.
Spider-Dad... It has Spider-Gwen.
Frickin' Korean Spider-Loli.
So, I'm super excited because the reviews for it are great. This is a movie that they actually started getting reviews on it because they released it for reviews like 2 weeks ago, which tells you that they want good word of mouth and they know they have a quality movie. That's the only reason you release a movie that early for reviews. So, I'm super excited. I think it's going to be great. Mm-hmm. And is that this weekend?
Yeah.
I think it's this weekend.
You used to work at the theater. You should know.
I think it's right now. Yeah, you used to work at the theater. Don't you know what's opening? God. This one is, I can't read with this glare. I don't know what's going on. 62.
Maybe it's just your old eyes.
It may be that I'm old.
What are you, 70 62 now?
62 is from, there it is. It's from Mrs. Darks again. And Mrs. Darks says, in my field, crystal structures are my nemesis. I just can't understand them. What is your nemesis in your field? I have an answer to you.
Define my field.
Well, I don't know. However you want to define it. All right. My nemesis? Printers. That's just that easy. Printers. Look, when I'm doing computers, I don't mind the computers. I don't mind the networking and wiring. I don't mind all the stuff in between. But when you get to printers and you get this output phase where there's lots of moving parts, it just infuriates me. And so fortunately, we've contracted out most of our printer work now because printers suck. But yeah, that's my nemesis. I hate printers.
My own doubting of my stories when I write them. Every time I write something new, I'm like, nah, that's stupid. And I have to write it like 50 times before I'm happy with it. And if I had just let it go, it would have been fine. But no, I had to waste an hour and a half rewriting it until I thought it looked good.
I thought you were going to tell me that your nemesis was the Baker's Choice 252 gas-powered pizza oven, but apparently not. So, all right, but I also feel a little bit bad because I was actually listening to you, and you were revealing something personal about yourself, but in my mind, I was devoting half of my attention to trying to remember the name of that pizza oven, so not to belittle your own statements. Don't do it.
Why did you ask me when we weren't recording if you were just going to ask me while we were recording anyway?
Because I'm pretending that I actually heard you the first time, so you didn't have to repeat it, and I just wanted to acknowledge that alright, look, I didn't listen to him at all the first time he was talking. I realized he was saying something that was important, but I was so busy thinking of the pizza oven that I didn't hear anything at all that he said.
That's a Simpsons situation. I know he said something, but I was too busy thinking of a pizza oven.
So then his mom came in, and so we had to pause it because his mom wanted to talk. While we were paused, I asked him to repeat it and explained, I'm so sorry that I wasn't listening, but I do care. Would you please repeat what you said? And so then when we come back, I was going to pretend like I did hear, and I am acknowledging. And now he has to throw me under the bus again just because I don't pay attention to him. God, you're so mean.
Man, I am. Yeah, I'm so unfair, aren't I?
Ah, fine. All right, we got two more of these.
You're not worth my attention. Sorry.
All right, this one is a 96. And you are worth my attention. That's why I apologized for not listening. I felt really bad. So 96 is from Daz. Daz says, hey, I may have asked this before, but when are you coming to Ireland? You live in Ireland?
You know what, Daz? You buy me a plane ticket to Ireland, let's go to Ireland.
You know, Ireland was my first choice
when
we went to Nova Scotia, but then it turns out that Ireland is way more expensive to get to and vacation in than Nova Scotia, and so therefore, we saved ourselves a couple $1,000s by going to Nova Scotia.
For me, I know I probably already said this on another episode with like our dream vacations or whatever, but I'd get a really, really good camera and go out to the Irish countryside.
Yeah, look, we would love to come visit Ireland. And it's just a matter of, you know, eventually getting the time and money and probably after our kids move out of the house. So the real answer to your question is probably in 10 years. Probably for our 35th wedding anniversary, we will come to Ireland.
So, for 25 years.
Yeah, that's why we went to Nova Scotia, was to celebrate our 25th anniversary. I know. Weird that you're not even 25 years old. That's like longer than you've been alive. What are the chances of that? So, last one is... I can't read it. It's 42. I know. How auspicious for our last one.
It's the number!
Yes, it is the number. It is the number of roads a man has to walk down before you can call him a man.
So, it's me and my friend, speaking of the number, like anytime we see 69 anywhere, we're like, look at that, it's the sex number. We have to make it, like, as childish as possible.
Very nice.
And so, it's just to ruin the day if anyone's like, look at that. And we're like, you're right, it's the sex number!
I said duty. You guys are so immature. Alright. Number 42 is from Ronster, and Ronster says, tell us about the uber-secret Boy Scout ceremony in which flags are retired.
Oh, I thought he was actually talking about the uber secret
scout ceremony. Yeah, no, not that one. You're not allowed to talk about that one. This is the ceremony in which flags are retired. And, you've been there for it.
Yeah, I've retired the flags.
Yeah.
It's not really secret when we do it at literally every public event ever.
No.
I don't get it.
No, the one where the Boy Scouts participate in a big flag burning.
Oh,
it's
like the Bible burning we do every year.
It's okay. No, the Bible burning is a completely separate event. This is a there's the Bible burning and then the book burning. I know Bibles are books technically, and then the flag burning that we no.
And then we burn any technology made after 2015.
No, yeah.
Why?
Because we're
advanced Amish.
I was just gonna say advanced Luddites. So, anywho, no.
We're Meta Knights.
We do.
Shut up,
Aiden. The Boy Scouts, in fact, do have a ceremony where, flags are quote unquote retired, and, any flag that has become too worn, too damaged, stained, etc., to properly be of service anymore is respectfully retired. And the Boy Scouts perform a lot of these, duties. I said duty. So, we've been there for them several times.
Uh-huh. I participated in one.
Yes.
At, Camp Cedars?
Yeah, at Camp Cedars. And the way we've seen it done, it's really beautiful. The guy that took care of it, and he's retired now, he doesn't come out for this anymore.
Much like the flags he worked with.
Yeah. And it's a very, long ceremony where he gives, you know, the history of the flag, and he speaks very respectfully of its meaning and what its purpose is and this and that. And then, they bring up a flag, that has obviously been worn out and is no longer useful, and they, very carefully lower it into the fire and retire it. Which nowadays, it turns out that these sorts of ceremonies go around.
So what you're saying, flag burning is okay as long as they give a speech beforehand?
Yes, that is exactly. As long as you give a patriotic speech in support of flags, yes, flag burning is acceptable.
In support of any flag.
But what has happened now is modern flags are made so often of synthetic materials that it is not safe or feasible to burn them anymore because the fumes are toxic. And so.
Just put them in like a kiln and melt them down. And...
Yeah, no. What they have to do, and this is the worst, is they go through the same ceremony with the respectful speeches and the whole business, and then whoever is on hand to volunteer for this then has to help break the flags apart, like separate the plastic sections from each other, pull the seams apart, pull all the rings off, and render them no longer flags so that now the materials can be sent to be recycled. And it is. Apparently a much, much less romantic and much more tedious version of the flag retirement ceremony.
But it is nobler. I mean...
Yeah, well, yeah, at least they're sending the parts out for recycling and this and that. And so, but yeah, it's much harder work. So, and then that is the end of the Pod-O-Matic. We're going to turn it over to GLaDOS and let her recap this episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage, Wonderful World by Sam Cooke, and Fingertips by They Might Be Giants. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use, and write me a nice review or a crappy review as long as you give it 5 stars, because that is what makes the difference. If you want to do something super nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends because you're enjoying it. You enjoy this podcast every week. Why wouldn't you just spread the word, tell one other person, let them enjoy it as well, or with you. You guys could sit down and have a Nerd Pride Radio listening party, like most people do. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network, which includes me, Nerd Pride Radio, and Bicoastal Disorder, which is awesome. Quality nerd podcasts from quality nerds. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. You can send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all of that grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on some social media platforms. You'll have to look. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is to sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up, send me a message, we will hang out together, we'll become best friends in the world, we'll have fun! And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my forums and to Facebook and I post up, hey guys, we're recording, anything you want to say, we will read off at the end of the podcast. Oh yeah. And
what am I, Top Liver over here?
And Aiden's platinum member list that he contacts by text to say, hey, we're recording, anything you want to say, we will read off at the end of the podcast. And that's what we're doing right now. All right, straight into it. We'll save your platinum list for last. We haven't had it for a few weeks, so I'm sure everyone is eager to participate. Let's start off on Facebook. And Facebook is... Nerd Pride Radio has 2 new comments. 2. I bet you can't beat that with your stupid list. And let's see. Come on. All right.
I can't beat 2.
I said, now recording episode 252. For the record, who's your favorite celebrity and why? Or talk about whatever. No pressure. All right. And the responses are from Nelly and Nelly. And Nelly says, such a difficult question to answer. I think right now it's Donald Glover. Ooh, good answer. I like Donald Glover.
What about...
And then, they're in reverse order.
Because
then she says, also, I've been noticing this last couple weeks, my Facebook comments wind up in reverse order for some reason. Oh, because they're in order by most relevant. Well, look at that. So if I put in all comments... Nope, still does the same thing. Also, I just saw Into the Spider-Verse, Nelly says, and it's probably in my top 5 movies ever. Have you seen it? No, we haven't, but apparently it is out this weekend. I was right. No, we haven't, but we are super excited to see it. I cannot wait. It looks great. So, very cool. And then...
So you combined gathered how many responses?
Hold on. Just quit.
I just want to know.
I want you to quit being sarcastic. That's what I want.
I'm just saying.
I have 5 responses here. So I grand total, I have 7. That's probably 3 times as many as you had. So I'm not looking at your phone. I don't care. I don't care. I'm sure it's some very high number that is not quite 7. So.
I think those terms are mutually exclusive, actually.
Really? Well, if you're used to the average being 1.3, then 7 would be super high. Just like Doug Benson. Super high. All right. There we go. Done and done. So, on my forums, I said, now recording, a question from Daz on the pod. Oh, yeah, by the way, the last question was from Ronster. This question is from Daz from the Podomatic, and it says, the Last Jedi. continuing dawn of a new era, or epic fail. And then I said also, talk about whatever, we're chill. Alright, so, Willie Gilligan says, do you have an actual schedule for these? I feel like I'm always surprised by the notifications.
Weekends. Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, sometimes Friday.
Then we release on Monday.
Right, it always releases Monday. But yeah, usually it's sometime over the weekend. It just depends on when I'm recording, which, you know, depends on our family's weekend schedule, depends on Aiden's schedule if he's going to join me. So yeah, usually Sunday is most often, Saturday less often, Friday very rarely, but it happens. Willie then says, Last Jedi is very flawed, but it's not really that bad. Take out Canto Bight. And stop having characters pass around the idiot stick, and it's very watchable. Yeah. Look, I didn't think it was a bad movie, but it also, it was very flawed. It was just not what I was hoping for, but, it was enjoyable. But yeah, there was a lot of things I would have left out or changed had I been the one in charge of it. So, Eliahad says, I thought Last Jedi was amazing. Sure, it had flaws. But Rey and Kylo still feel like real characters way over their heads with the forces they're dealing with. Eh, good point. And even when Kylo takes the Emperor's place, spoiler, I don't think he understands the scope of that decision. Boy, that's the truth. I was going to ask something, but I forgot. Maybe I'll come back. Hey, speaking of Dave, you want to see a picture of Dave this morning?
Sure. Great radio.
Yeah, so since we're on radio here.
Hey, is the theme this week Schoolhouse Rock?
Well, this week, like for the last 3 months, it's been Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh, well, no, I'm just going by the letter of what the...
This is Dave performing at a kids' concert this morning. So...
Is the camera on your bow?
It must be. Yeah, it looks like the camera is taken from his bow of his cello, looking up the cello towards him where he's wearing a Santa hat. And he has a look on his face that is just... borderline, either he's about to break out into laughter, or he's just about to turn green and go full Grinch. It's really hard to tell.
Or both.
Right. This is the picture captioned with, I've made very poor choices in my life. That's what he says. So, this is a good picture. Anyway, next up is Flameblade. Flameblade says, quick, top three board games. Godball.
Oh, wow.
Oh, dude, have you played Godball? That thing is awesome. Secret Hitler. And, oh, what else have I been playing a lot of lately or wanted to play a lot of lately? No. Magic is awesome. But
Have you heard of Game Nights that Magic came out with?
Yes. Yes, where they have a set that's just ready for...
Yeah, up to 5 players at once, and games go quick, and it's easy to learn.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. No, Secret Hitler, Captain is Dead. I really love Captain is Dead. I think that is a great game. And Photosynthesis is pretty good, but then also, so are lots of others. These are just, Photosynthesis and Captain is Dead are the most recent ones that I've been playing a fair bit of, but... I have so many good games.
Asking
really
Mike for his top three board games is like asking a mother to pick up her children.
Is Clank the board game what you've been missing from your life? Oh, I don't know how many times I've said that. I don't even know what Clank is, and yet I can feel this Clank-shaped hole in my heart. I'll have to look it up. Who is the enemy of your mother's friend's son's father-in-law's bartender? Dark Helmet?
Dave from accounting?
Probably. It is, it says he's a bartender. Does he do that on the weekends?
Dave comes into his bar and he's kind of a dick when he's drunk. Not our Dave.
Okay, because I'm assuming the enemy of my enemy is my friend, but who's the enemy of your mother's friend? But
nothing, which you were about to become. It's the punchline to that joke.
So, what is the most extensive life crisis you have been through? Please describe only using quotes from your latest D&D game. Oh, well, this is easy, because the quotes from our latest D&D game are, "Oh my god, what is that thing? Jesus Christ, what is that giant demon shadow bat? I can't even, oh lord, it's killing us!" What? Now, that's maybe not the most accurate description of my most extensive life crisis, but it's the only way I can describe it using the quotes from my most recent game, because those are the quotes.
Are you really going to stay in the shadows, Brother Michael? How about you tell them yourself? That's all I got. All
right. Good. I think that was a great question. I really like that one. Then Eliahad says, "Never mind, Flame has us covered. I'll make sure that this one gets transcribed for him." Oh, crap. I just had an idea. Have you ever thought about having a speech-to-text translator run while you record? I know it would take a little editing to do that, but far less than someone transcribing it. Yes, I have thought about that, and actually you don't even need to have it run while you're recording. You can just run your audio in, you know, after it's recorded. I can just take the MP3 and run it into a speech-to-text translator. And the problem is that it's not just a little editing, it's a ton of editing because the speech that we use while recording is far different than the speech you use when dictating.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it takes a lot of editing to make them work. It's really ugly and awkward. And thus, I've never really made a serious effort at it. But yeah, wouldn't it be nice? I would love to have Flameblade actually get to participate. I mean, he participates and he's wonderful about it. But, you know, when he's getting nothing out of this other than knowing that he's contributing, I feel bad.
Uh-huh.
So it would be nice to have those done. All right, next one's from Eliahad. And he says, "Oh, I remember. Where do you find your motivation to do things? What keeps you going? Or where do you find your inspiration? Are they from the same place?" Inspiration just comes out of nowhere. Inspiration is just literally suddenly two or three good ideas just kind of gel into one, and it's like, oh, but then if you did it this way, you'd be great. I don't know where inspiration comes from. It just hits you. Motivation is, you know, sometimes it's because you're just excited about a thing and you want to do it. And other times it's because you force yourself to be motivated. You're like, okay, I know I have to, so let's get it going. And I'm thinking specifically of Godball when I say this, that, look, I've been missing Godball. I've been feeling guilty about not doing much with it, but I haven't been able to get up and go lately. And now all of a sudden I've got some energy. And so I made a choice to say, hey, I've finally got a little energy. I'm going to turn just a little bit of that attention to Godball. And sure enough, oh God, it's making me excited about it. But I had to make that decision to get there. And it's working for me. So I'm good. All right. You got anything?
Yeah, you got one more.
What? It says done.
Okay, cool. Just making sure.
Okay. And then, Aiden has nothing. Well,
I have eight
it's
of
been
them.
A great... Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, God darn it. I was thinking you were going to tell me like 16 or something like that. And I was just going to be ashamed. But eight? You just beat me by one?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
The first one is from Tim. Hi, Tim. Well, I first sent out, "Hey, Platinum members, my dad and I are recording today. If you'd like us to say something or have us read anything, now is your chance. We'll read anything you send us. This week's question, invent a new music genre. What's its name and what does it sound like?" And Tim responds with, "Electric Spaz. A spoken word beat poem backed by Jacob's Ladder Frequencies, popularized in future updates to monster movie musicals such as Frankenstein's Footloose."
Wow. He really put some effort into that one. I'm impressed.
"Whoever has connections to Hollywood gets started on Frankenstein's Footloose immediately." Like, not only does the town hate him for being a monster, they hate all his dancing, too.
"Yes, we could have tolerate you being an abomination to God, but this dancing."
The next one's from Lisa. "Hi, Mom. I love my family, but my mom is the most awesome."
Wow, what did she type? Huh? Nothing. Okay.
Yeah.
Move on.
I did! I read it!
Keep going.
Alright, the next one's from Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie.
Hey, Stephanie.
Dynamite. Only dinosaur sounds.
Oh. Okay.
I like it.
I'll give you that.
Jurassic Park to the max. She follows up.
Alright.
Next is from Emily. Hi, Emily.
Hey, Emily. Is she new?
Oh, yeah, she's been on the last couple.
Okay.
My genre is called silence, and it sounds like some fucking peace and quiet.
Wow, is there something you want to talk about, Em? You alright?
And she also says, also welcome back from your extended absence from the podcast.
Yeah, I never tell him when I'm recording.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't want him here.
Not a lot of people. Dungeon Funk, says Sam.
Dungeon Funk, okay.
It's music made from ambient sounds of ruined castles, caves, and dungeons.
That, you know what? That's actually really workable.
Yeah.
That would be really fun. I mean, water drips, scraping, yeah. The just echoes, the
rats.
So many good things you can do down there.
Rubble falling off the walls.
Okay.
And that's all I got.
Nice. All right, well, this has been an excellent episode. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah. Thank I appreciate you being here.
For finally showing up. People have been missing you, and where have you been?
Fight me.
So, anyway, I appreciate all you guys showing up as well. You guys are awesome. Thank you for being here. We love you. You're great. We will talk to you next week.
You guys have a wonderful day.